Welcome to another Prime TSR podcast. I have two very special guests. We have Jack Marchetti, who is a cloud solutions architect, and John Bennett, who is a software architect. And today we're discussing customer experience. And I have a lot of questions for both of you. I know you guys are very, very good at this stuff. So welcome to the show. And I want to start off with an example of customer experience and why it's important. So, you know, let me just have a question for both of you. Let me just start off this with this is, you know, what is a great use case for creating a unified customer experience? And I'd like for you to start with what a unified customer experience really means. And maybe if there are a few examples that are out there that others can relate to. So let me just throw that one out there.
So to me, I guess a unified customer experience would be where no matter which device or platform I'm on, I'm able to, you know, see the app or the website in the exact same way, and it's easy to use and pick up, and I don't have to think about the user experience. I don't have to think about where anything is, and I can just use it. To me, some good experiences around that are Ticketmaster, where the app, the website, the iPad app all feel, look exactly the same, down to the coloring, down to the font sizes. Everything is very unified and very easy to follow and very easy to navigate. And for someone like me who's visually impaired, that's extremely important, because the last thing I want to do is be able to, you know, pick, you know, I typically use, you know, a computer, desktop, because it's typically just easier for me to use than a smaller device. But if I'm able to use, you know, the desktop and then pick up the mobile app, and it's as seamless and easy to navigate, that it's very helpful for me. The way that you're able to purchase tickets, get tickets on your phone, transfer tickets via the phone or via the app or via the website is, you know, it's all a seamless experience that makes me not have to think while using the application, which is something that Apple does incredibly well. They've put an enormous amount of time and energy resources into figuring out or making sure that if I pick up an iPhone, if I pick up an iPad, if I switch using something like Handoff to my iMac or whatever, it all looks and feels exactly the same. And that comes with partly with Apple being completely in charge or in control of all of their hardware, which allows them to make their software as good as it is. And something like Ticketmaster, where the front end can feel the same across all aspects, is likely due to the way they've built their back end, where it's completely decoupled. And therefore, you know, the front end can take on its own changes and modifications without having to worry about how it manages the data, since the data is kind of uniform across. So that's my two cents.
But yeah, I mean, I'll echo in what you're saying. It doesn't even just have to be companies or applications that are strictly digital. Like Ticketmaster is a good example of that. Just, you know, everybody's doing all the home improvement projects with the lockdown. One of my favorite stores that I've probably spent way too much money at this year is Home Depot. And I think they're a great example of a unified customer experience. You know, to echo what Jack was saying, the branding and stuff like that. But not even just that. If you've ever been to a Home Depot store, they have a very specific experience that you're going to go through in terms of just how you find things. You know, they all have the aisles and the bays and stuff like that, and you've become accustomed to this. You can go to any Home Depot store from one to the other, and they're all built the same way. The customer service is always going to be at the front. The pro desk is always going to be on one or the other side. And you can almost kind of figure your way out from one store to another, because it's pretty impressive. But then it extends into their digital presence. You go to the website, again, whether it's a computer or your phone, it's kind of the same, like, search, and they're all built the same way at this point. And then even they have a mobile app that kind of goes into it. So it's like that unified customer experience, both from the look and feel and where things are at and stuff like that, but then also the process that you're going to undergo, whether it's buying something, whether it's returning something, whatever it might be. So it's the same thing that you're going to experience regardless of the platform which you're on.
I like that example, especially like the physical, the digital. It's how they organize their aisles, you know, is very similar to, you know, how they organize the app, and that experience shouldn't be too different. And that leads me into the next question is this all sounds great. You know, it sounds like, you know, every company should do this, and there's not really any reason to not do it. And I suspect that's the case for many of these companies that are trying to do this. But what are the challenges of companies who are trying to build these digital experiences? Like, why is it harder than it should be? Or what should they be doing, you know, to create a unified experience outside of just creating that process? What are the challenges, you know, technology process challenges in place to make something like that happen?
Sure, I'll jump in on this one. Like my opinion on this one, depending on the sizes of the company, a lot of companies have been built with disparate systems. So, you know, I got an inventory ordering system that might be, you know, tied into an old ERP system or even a new ERP system, or their customer service system is a completely different system. Their, I don't know, ordering, whatever it is, they're just different systems, and they're not very well integrated. So that's number one. Interestingly enough, you know, with today's cloud solutions that are out there, it's becoming easier and easier to do this. So that number one is probably the biggest hurdle. You know, an order in one system versus an order in another system, or the inventory and stuff like that. Those are big ones. I think the other one is, and I've seen this with my own experiences, different sales channels that ultimately result in like different customers when they may not be different customers. And you've seen this before. You can see this in human life or whatever. Like one sales rep leaves a company and a new guy comes in, there's that transition that has to occur here at this point. And so, you know, they do that. There's a conscious effort to do that. But like, if I'm going to sell to, like, if Amazon had a brick and mortar store, I got a pretty good relationship with Amazon at this point. They've got my order history, all that other stuff. I should be able to go into that store, meet a sales rep, and he should be able to pull all that same stuff up. So I think those are some of the bigger challenges between different business processes among different departments, among different systems that are in there. Those are some of the bigger ones that I think companies have a challenge getting over.
I like that.
And I would just add to that, you know, John was kind of alluding to this as well, but, you know, when you have tightly coupled systems that are older and haven't been updated in a long time, it makes changing out your UI and your back, it makes updating the UI or the front end that much more difficult. And unless you're actively doing that in what we call loosely coupling or decoupling, it makes changing the look and feel and things along those lines quite difficult to achieve. And some of this can just come from the fact that, you know, some tech companies, like, you know, they're filled with engineers and they just don't give the proper time and energy and resources to the actual look, feel, and user experience of their application. So,
and that's really good. And there's actually one little follow-up question I have to this question in regards to the technology. So if you're a company, right, and you want to build these unified digital experiences, you know, you obviously get the whole, you know, the front end stuff, which is the, you know, the branding, the color, the ease of use, et cetera, but you have the disparate data systems. Like, what at a high level, what process would you take to get those technology systems in place so then you can create this unified CX? Like, what at a high level, how would you look at that process of getting your technology data systems in place to be able to create that?
Yeah, I'll jump on this one. This is, you know, something like it's becoming more and more possible. So, you know, short as 5 years ago, putting a message bus or eventing type of technologies in a company was cost prohibitive. It was hard. Yeah. It has become so easy to do now. And that is one of the first things that you can do. You don't have to worry about tying system A to system B. What you do is you publish it out onto a message and then let your other systems kind of consume it as you need to. And then it allows multiple things. I mean, obviously you have, you know, the communication that's occurring within different systems in your company, but then you also have from an experience standpoint, you know, we talk about, I've mentioned this several times now, like if I'm interacting with one system and if it's not, you know, a cohesive system, and I shouldn't have to worry about whether or not, you know, I've created a relationship with, you know, one part of the company versus the other, it's there. So right. those are now able to be synced up and stuff like that. So that the short answer is the very first thing that I would do is find a way to get these things to talk. But the way we could do that is with some of these emerging technologies in the cloud that are now readily available, and that is, you know, putting the organic data from these individual systems onto a messaging system for, you know, all these consumers to be able to access.
Yeah, and some of those technologies, you know, if you're using AWS, you would use their, which is their oldest service, the first service that AWS, Amazon Web Services, ever created was their SQS, Simple Queue Services, which is where you publish something into a queue and then have your other systems react to, you know, events within that queue. And one of the benefits of that as well is, one, you've now decoupled your application. Two, you can now auto scale your other systems based upon the queue size. And since this is all being done, you know, by a managed service in AWS, you don't have to worry about it in your on-prem environment. You don't have to worry about the underlying hardware. You don't have to worry about scaling that out yourself. You can trigger, let's say, your order system or your inventory mm-hmm. system or whatever to look at, oh, the queue length, you know, it's Black Friday, so our order queue length is getting high, so scale out to increase capacity. Another thing is now with serverless technologies such as Lambda, functions, the worry about auto scaling is somewhat reduced because they can all run in parallel, and you can have Lambda functions simply react to, you know, an order was placed within a queue. I've subscribed to, you know, this notification or this event, and now run this thing, and they just run independently of everything else. And so not only have you, you know, you decoupled your application, but you've also potentially built in what's called the fanning out architecture, where, you know, you place something in a queue or a notification system, and now these 10 other things happen, and those can also then put things into queues, and you just have, you know, entirely decoupled, very elastic, scalable solution that ideally won't crash for you when traffic and orders and things along those lines increase. So it's really like, I get really excited when I start talking about the cloud stuff, just because it's kind of like playing Legos when I was a kid. You know, you just keep piling on different pieces, and, you know, for everything you can think of, there's a service for it, and there's a managed service for it. And, you know, managed services are something where the cloud provider manages the underlying hardware and operating system and things like that for you. You don't have to worry about servers or configurations or anything like that. And I'm not really an infrastructure guy, so anytime I can do anything managed, I'm a big fan of. I don't know if you are as well, John, but I definitely am.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the kind of answer to close out stopping, and I think probably the big thing with this is that I want to point out from, like, just from a business standpoint, you know, if you've got technology professionals, developers, DBAs, you know, that you're working in your company, what by having this, what Jack's talking about here, is you no longer have a DBA babysitting a database server. Now they're out doing, you know, stuff to make a better customer experience. You know, you don't have developers that are babysitting hardware, or, you know, someone, an infrastructure guy worrying about whether or not he's got enough, you know, memory to sit there and support Black Friday. These people can now focus on better business processes, making a better customer experience, you know, and that's really the benefit to these.
Yeah, what it sounds like is, you know, is times have changed. You know, before to do something like this, it would require a big, you know, sort of, you know, data effort in place, or like a long-term 2 to 3 year project before a company can even begin on that. But now with these cloud technologies, like you said, the serverless and these, you know, event buses, et cetera, you're able to sort of decouple a lot of these events and still enable these customer experiences without, you know, a 3 year project, where that's just like the foundation of it.
You can almost be, it's almost too fast in some cases, like, right, on how quickly it is, on how quickly you can get up and running. It's almost too fast, which that's a different and better problem to manage, in my opinion.
Exactly.
One of the first, like, major projects I worked on where I actually had to dig into, you know, actual servers and things along those lines, you know, the amount of time it took to, you know, I need these servers, I need 3 of them, and then to get them racked and get them all set up and things along those lines. And by the time I have 3, well, maybe I need 5, right? So taking the guesswork out of your, you know, picking or figuring out your capacity limits and things along those lines is now pretty much trivial, because you have almost an unlimited capacity where, you know, I can go on AWS right now, create a free account, and I can immediately spin up 20 servers, no questions asked. They're all up and running within about 5 minutes, and I can be global within 5 minutes. And then if I send a support request to reduce my, because they put limits on you initially, but you can reduce them, and now it's like, now I have 1,000, right? And I can have them in on the East Coast, or I can have them on the West Coast, or I can have them, right, in Canada, or I can have them anywhere in the world. And the fact that you can do that from the command line is kind of, you know, to say it was a paradigm shift in computing when the cloud kind of started to take off is an understatement.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a good, you know, sort of segue in this next thing. I mean, what's very clear is that, you know, from a customer experience perspective, the technology is there, right? There's no longer a limitation. Now it's more of, you know, what technology do we choose, and do we have the right, you know, the team and resources, you know, to do that? And it's not always a technology issue, right? I mean, it's always, you know, we've sort of, it's more of which technology we choose, but there's a lot of other things, a lot of other considerations, you know, when building, you know, what we're calling an omni-channel experience that are not just technology. So what, help me understand, outside of the technology, what are some considerations when I'm trying to build an experience that works on, you know, mobile and desktop and tablet, or maybe even like voice or chatbots and things like that? What are some considerations to use that would be helpful in creating, you know, a unified customer experience?
So going back to kind of my Ticketmaster example of ensuring the look and feel is consistent throughout, obviously Apple does this incredibly well. So the branding, the coloring, the layout, you know, where the search button is, right? If it's in the top right on the website, it should be in the top right on my app. Whereas the hamburger menu, right? It's typically on the left-hand side in mobile apps. And if it's on the right-hand side, you know, it can be off-putting to some people, although I've seen it, you know, in different apps sometimes do it differently. I think Uber, like, sometimes not, like, it's on the left, but sometimes on the right. Anyways, so keeping that old, like, a uniform design, brand, look and feel. Like, an example I gave once is, you know, like, if a car, you know, had, like, the door colors were different or on backwards and some, it would just look very strange and you wouldn't get in the car, right? Therefore, you know, if your website looks like it was just thrown together with crayons and no one gave any thought, rhyme or reason to it, I'm probably not going to enter my credit card in and give you money, right? Another thing, as someone who's, you know, visually impaired, something I like to think about is, you know, accessibility. It's not something that's often thought of. But recently, with a lot of companies have been sued because they don't adhere to the WCAG, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. And if you don't adhere to, I think it's up to their AA level, you can potentially be sued. And plenty of companies have been, not necessarily for damages, but just, you know, a blind person wanted to be able to use the website and they couldn't, and they sued for that company to force them to do it. Another thing to keep in mind as well is if you're, you know, a global company and you have users in different parts of the world where they read from right to left as opposed to left to right, you know, your UI and layout should adhere to those people, to those cultures, those languages. John, if you want to jump in.
Yeah, well, I mean you hit on a couple of them. I mean, so consistent brand colors, I mean, most of the time your marketing people are going to control that anyway, in terms of, like, you know, if you got, you know, the positioning of the brand and stuff like that. And that's fairly easy, assuming you have, like, you know, styling standards for the site. But I mentioned this before about my Home Depot experience, in terms of, like, it's the same experience, whether, you know, it's I'm buying something online or if I go into the store, it's really the same thing. Some of the things that, like, I guess that I would, you know, recommend is getting a little bit into the technical side of it, but, like, for mobile stuff, for example, right? iOS and Android and even Windows have three different layouts that are out there. And, you know, I've seen some companies, including the account we're working on right now, they have three different applications and it's three very different experiences, for their mobile experience. One way to get around that in terms of, like, another factor as, you know, a champion or a sponsor for customer experience is to make sure that experience is the same across the platform. And there's technologies out there or frameworks out there that you can use, Xamarin I could think of, right? So that'll build one app. So there's maintenance costs, obviously, that are reduced for it. But now you have the same experience regardless of the platform that the user is sitting on. Drawback to this is now you're limited to the least common denominator. But in my opinion, I don't know if it's that limiting. So, I mean, there's things like that. I mean, not that they should be worried about the technology up front, but that should be front of mind, in my opinion, that says, I want to make sure that we have the same experience. So that way the people that are responsible for the technical decisions know that non-functional requirement.
And that's a great segue to the next question, which is, you know, how do you prioritize your non-functional requirements when building these experiences? And I think, you know, I guess a follow-on to that question, or to clarify that question, is what has to be in place for these things to work properly. And these are things that are under the hood that a normal person would have no idea even exists or has to exist. Help me understand what are the things that have to be in there, you know, or I guess what we're calling the non-functional requirements or the technology foundation that has to be in there when building these experiences, knowing how these experiences are probably going to change, you know, as they evolve. So what are your recommendations on, you know, that part?
Well, yeah. So first one right off the get-go is security. Jack already alluded to this earlier. It cannot be an afterthought. I worked at a company one time that, because, you know, the technology was old or whatever it is, but it wasn't there or they didn't know how to do it, they were storing credit cards in the open text in their ERP system. So it was just wrong. Nobody liked it, and it was just by the time it was there, it was like it was too much to undo at this point. So that's, you know, you hear about it every other day. There's like some kind of massive data breach or whatever. So security is first and foremost, especially if your customers, this is, you know, that brand extension, there's a big trust there. I would look at some of the requirements in terms of host nation, like, you know, is GDPR, if you're gonna be operating in Europe, is that one of those things that you know, we have to think about? New York, they have, was it the New York code 500 that has to be applicable? So I don't know if these are there, but that has to be first and foremost. And you have to have that answer in place up front on how, one, you're going to authenticate people, and two, how are you going to protect their private data in there? And then the experience needs to be baked into the customer experience, right? We've seen this through two-factor authentication and stuff like that. I've never met anybody that says, oh, your application's too secure. Now, the experience might be a little annoying, but, you know, in today's day and age, I mean, if I were logging into my bank, I'm a Chase customer, and they didn't have some of the protocols that were in place, I'd be a little nervous about it. So that's number one. I would say number two is, we kind of already alluded to this a little bit, is the user experience is going to change. We saw it. I mean, at this point, I've seen three different major paradigms over the years as I've been working as a developer and stuff like that. You know, it was like we had server type technology, and then client side technology became popular again. Bootstrap was on the scene for a long time. Angular, when it showed up, really shook things up in terms of single page applications, and it's continuing to evolve, right? The mobile, obviously, evolution is continuing. So there's fault in assuming that your UI is going to, once I invest in it, it's done, it's changed. I would make sure that we put some effort into your core business logic, your core experience, separated from the engaging part of your customer experience. You know, we might have a whole new technology and not mobile applications, you know, 5 years from now, but at the end of the day, you're still selling widgets. So, right.
Yeah. I like that, which is you're expecting things to change. And so how you architect it is expecting it to change, knowing that there might be something on top of that that you don't even know exists. Yeah. Cause it changes so fast.
That's a perfect way of putting it. And by, again, you put that from a non-functional upfront and you say that, then the people that are responsible for designing these systems will at least think about that, you know, upfront. Now, the converse of that is don't get stuck into such an analysis you never get anything done, right? There's certain trade-offs that have to happen. You're not gonna be able to solve and keep yourself extensible for every single problem that's ever going to exist. But there's definitely a good balance that you can find between the two.
And the last thing I want to talk about here, you know, if there are any, you know, we've talked about Ticketmaster and Apple and some of these other, I guess, well-known companies, but there's a lot of, you know, these companies that exist that are still trying to catch up. So you might have some experience with helping these companies sort of catch up to create unified experiences. Do you have any examples or case studies that are worthy talking about as far as whether you're creating the customer experience for them or creating the foundation for them, and maybe the approach that you take as far as creating these experiences? Anything that's worthy of sharing?
One thing I would say is I was working on the SC Johnson account at my previous, I was in an ad agency prior to this, and we were tasked with, you know, revamping their entire digital ecosystem, right? They had these very old, very, you know, it looked like developers had designed their websites kind of thing. And we had come in and done these huge facelifts to match not only the product, but also their commercials, and give, you know, in that regard, a unified experience throughout. And one of the things we had to take them through was getting them to understand, like, how, you know, how the look and feel was going to change, giving them examples of how, like, wireframes worked, walking them through wireframes, explaining that, like, the wireframes aren't actually what the website looks like. It's a wireframe. It's a blueprint. And then introducing things like, I think it's called InDesign, which is an app where you can take the PSDs from, you know, Photoshop and then create through, like, clickable areas, the experience of going through the application, right? Which was really beneficial because it gave people, you know, you're actually in the browser, you're clicking around, and it gave people this the idea of, okay, this is how it's going to look and feel. I don't know if that exactly answers the question, but it's the only thing I could think of.
I have, I mean, I can actually, it kind of is a good example of everything we've talked about here. There was my previous, in a previous employer, there was a company that we were engaged with to build them a new customer portal. So they work in the waste industry. When I say waste, I'm not talking like garbage. I mean like that heavy, nasty stuff, like heavily regulated type of waste. And so like police departments and fire departments with chemical waste or even biological waste that has to be disposed of in a very regulated way. So they had a portal that was tied in some kind of way to their SAP system. It's a transnational company. They were Spain, I think UK, and then obviously they had a presence here in the United States. And the approach, the design, and the engagement that we put into them, and I laughed before I got a chance to build it, but it was the very first thing I did was recommend that they put in a message bus to allow these disparate systems to do it. And then we separated the presentation logic from the core business systems by just using simple, and Jack alluded to some of these, serverless technologies up front, so that way they could deal with their high demand volume that would occur on a seasonal type of basis, because there's a lot of reporting requirements that they have to report to the federal government about. So their reporting server would come under massive duress, you know, for 2 weeks of that of the year, but then the rest of it had sat idle. So it's the customer experience. This is exactly what we were talking about here in terms of some of these things that we were going to put in. And then to make it that much more, to kind of tie this all together, this was going to be the same portal that people would log into, whether or not you were a customer in Spain, a customer in the United States, or a customer in the UK. The only difference that we had to deal with there was obviously localization and the currencies. So it was a classic case study in terms of them revamping their digital presence in the world.
And that's really good. And I think, I guess, one other question I have is, I mean, and help me understand this. So the type of work you do now, how much of that is this, I guess, this data work? And we can edit this part out. I'm just one question, like, how, maybe because I want to talk more about, like, because these examples are good, but if there's any examples now we have, or at least we're building these data platforms to help then build these digital experiences, even if we're not building those digital experiences. Do you have anything like that you think we can share?
You say like data platforms, like as in terms of like storing customer data, or
I guess that's the way I look at it, because you guys are more of like decoupling that data and building those message buses initially, now not knowing if they can help build those.
Well, so this is what's interesting about this is, you know, by having these, you know, eventing technologies, right? Again, so a message bus or a queue or something along those lines, you can actually build custom whatever to keep your data to have enriched type of experiences on, and you don't even necessarily know. I mean, that's where, you know, we start hearing about data lakes and data warehouses, or even emerging technologies such as artificial intelligence that's going to go through and do some machine learning on some of this stuff. By having it decoupled, what you're doing is that data is king, right? So every user click that gets logged and says that the, you know, user came in here and they bounced off the page at this point, that's data is king. It's not the systems at this point. It's absolutely the data. By having it go in there and they're separated from your front end customer experience systems, now you're enabling a different part of your business to go through and research or come up with new insights on it, or even sell it. I had a CIO that I worked for once that worked for Experian. And you want to talk about a company that has a lot of personal information, all the people and their credit history, stuff like that, right? They ended up producing a product that allowed them to identify out-of-state drivers that were going through the open road tolling, because the states don't talk to each other, because they are able to tie like all of this information together in terms of like who's married to different people and where they've lived in different parts of the country and stuff like that. When, you know, someone from Iowa went zipping through an Illinois open road tolling, they were able to go find that Iowa person and issue them the fine. And it ended up being a, you know, $1 billion enterprise for a product for these guys as they did it. So data is king. When you talk about, answer your question, it's by putting in these cloud-based scalable systems and having your applications, your individual systems that don't have to necessarily talk to each other directly. They're talking to a message or to a message bus or through eventing systems. You can keep the data separate and have that do its own thing. You can have each application good at what's doing its own thing. And then your job then just becomes to kind of orchestrate them in between.
Yeah, no, that's good. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about that we didn't cover or any questions that I didn't ask you think would be worth talking about?
I mean, the only thing I would say when we start talking about customer experience, and I'm the guy that uses it. We mentioned a couple things, especially with some of the emerging technologies that are coming out, you know, artificial learning and chatbots. You mentioned chatbots. I just had an infuriating experience with Sonos over the weekend because they like to use a chatbot. And eventually I got to a person that's out there. So while some of these things are great, I also think they can hurt you. I'm all about bringing a chatbot or some machine learning type of technology, especially to answer rudimentary stuff, but it has to be implemented correctly. And if it's not good, then it's not one of those things that I would put in. I don't,
right.
You know?
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I would just add, just because I kind of had this experience over the weekend as well, is, you know, a non-functional requirement is, you know, something the guys who created Stack Overflow talked about, that performance is a feature, right? Mm-hmm. And the speed at which your page loads and things like that should be forefront. It shouldn't, you know, users are savvy enough today to know that like these things should, you know, load quickly. And if there's studies out there that if your page takes over like 2 seconds to load, people are just going to leave because they just have no patience for that anymore. But even to that, you know, users are savvy now where they kind of understand I don't want to say they understand the cloud, but they understand that like, you should be a, like, if there's an event that was planned and your application goes down, they're going to be very unforgiving. For example, over the weekend, you know, sports betting is legal now in Illinois, and you have, you know, there's multiple apps you can use now, and DraftKings crashed right after the noon games. And as a sports bettor, what you typically do is you bet the noon games. And then if you won, you then double up on the afternoon games. If you lost, you chase your losses in the afternoon games. And since their application stopped working because their multi-factor authentication system crashed. So you couldn't log in because the MFA code was not being sent. And eventually they just off MFA like 4 hours later because they have this single point of failure that crashed. So clearly their MFA solution wasn't highly available, right? And so users are on Twitter basically saying like, we are leaving your application because your competitor, I was able to bet on them. So I'm taking all my money and giving it to them. So things along those, like, it's not just the technological thing, right? You're going to be completely alienating customers who understand that like services like Facebook don't ever crash, right? And Facebook has 2 billion users. So if they've solved this problem, like it is a solved problem, like performance is a solved problem. And like, if I can log into Facebook and upload photos, why can't I place a bet on your application when you knew it was week one of the NFL season? And how did you not provision capacity, right? Now, granted, they probably just had one little part of their system not work, the MFA part, but it limited everyone from being able to use it, which then now Twitter is just filled with everyone complaining, right? And it's not a good look for them considering, you know, it was their first foray into some states with legal betting. So, you know, it has a huge impact if you don't take these things, I don't want to say seriously, but the fact that it was down for 4 hours to me is kind of insane. Like, it took them 4 hours to realize that that was the problem and that they needed to turn that off to allow people to at least log in. You know, I don't know their system, obviously, so it might be, again, if you can't turn parts of your application off when it's failing and then the whole thing doesn't work, you know, it cascades. So
right.
Something I wanted to add.
That's very good. You both made a good business case for how just this the underlying technology foundation really impacts every aspect of the customer experience, you know, and how ingrained it is into everything that a business operates. So Yeah, thank you so much for your time. I've learned quite a bit, and yeah, I really appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing it published.
Thanks, dude.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated.